Before we get started with this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Adore.fm, and CairoRadio.com, and wherever else podcasts are available. Let's get started with the show. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 300 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks. We've got a great show for you today. A great show. Well, for you this week, whenever you're listening to it. Episode 300, man. We made it. We made it. We got several emails in the recent month since we've been taking the month off. Stating that I've done my math wrong. People have been going through the archives and you know, plotting this stuff out, apparently. And yes, I did my math wrong. It has only been 6 years. It's been 6 years. I don't know why. I mean, I could just go back and see when the first episode was posted and subtract, you know, 2010 from 2016 and then come up with 6 years. I could have done that, but of course, you know, that's tough, man. That's really, that's hard math. That's hard math right there. Episode 300, man. We made it. 6 years of the Air Raid Podcast. What a ride it has been, folks. Let me tell you, man, we've got a lot of, you know, a lot of interest in the podcast going on right now. And people have been reaching out wanting to do interviews about the upcoming 300th episode. It's been fun. Now, in recent months, I have been thinking about cutting down the frequency of episodes that come out, just to be able to kind of focus on stuff that we want to do, and you know, be able to be with family and stuff. As many of you know, we've been going through some health issues here in the Roden household, and you know, it's kind of made me, you know, sit back and kind of take stock of what I'm putting my priorities in. Now, you know, doing the show now has become like second nature. Although I will say that I feel very out of practice sitting in this chair talking to you right now. This is like, what, the sixth time that I've now recorded this intro over again? So hopefully, you know, six times the charm, right? 6 years, six times, who knows? But as I'm thinking more about it, and people have been showing more interest, and people have been donating to the show, you know, I've decided that we're going to keep it going, man. We're going to keep it going as long as we can. We're going to keep to the once a week ritual that is the Air Raid Podcast. All right. So no worries there. Although you weren't worried before because I had never talked about that. So anyway, all right. Bunch of great stuff coming up for the month of July, folks. This week, of course, we've got Sam Beam, aka Iron and Wine, on the show. I've been working on this one for a couple years now, trying to get Sam on whenever he came in through Seattle, and it finally worked out. It finally worked out, and we have a great conversation. Now, one thing I do have to say about this conversation is that Sam is a very, very quiet man, a very low talker. Although he's very open in this conversation, we talk about a lot of stuff, about his life, how he got started in music, going from basically a filmmaker and then film professor and then musician, professional musician, like just like the snap of a finger, man. He just did it because that's the talent that this man possesses. All right. It's a crazy story. He hadn't even played a show. and he was signed to Sub Pop. And they were like, you know what? You need to start playing shows. You need some practice. So he goes and plays a show. It's a good, it's an amazing story, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. But yeah, he is a low talker. So I had to boost the signal of this, and so you're going to hear a bit of background noise because we did this in the green room at the Neptune Theater. When he's on tour for this new album with him and Jessica Hoop, which is absolutely fantastic. We're going to be featuring a song off of that album. Let's see, in the middle spot of the show, okay? But yeah, so we had to boost the signal on this to, you know, hear everything. And so, you know, there's some background noise from this really, really noisy refrigerator that had nothing in it. And I could have just, you know, as I thought about it afterwards, as I was leaving the venue, I was like, I could have just unplugged that fucking thing. There was nothing inside of it. Wouldn't have heard anything, right? Damn it. Hindsight is always 20/20, right? All right. Let's see. We've got an email that I would love to read to you. We've got a ton of emails, but you know what? There's just not enough time. However, I did finally this morning, it's Saturday, I finally got back to the last email, I think. I need to go back through and see if I've answered all of them. But this one was actually one that kind of it made me decide to keep doing the show once a week. And I'll start it here. Just dropping you a line because I need you to know you keep me sane while at my job. But I just found out about you because I listened to the Arwen Nix episode, and I adore her. Anyway, carry on, my wayward son. Cheers and happy times to you, Kim Warnick. Now, if you don't know who Kim Warnick is, you need to do some educating, because she is an amazing bass player. Has played with the likes of Vis Queen here in Seattle, and also was one of the founding members of a seminal punk rock band here in Seattle called the Fastbacks. And Kim has played the world. She's toured the world, playing in the Fastbacks, playing in Vis Queen, playing in her other bands. And this was so awesome to get a message from her. I have been a fan of the Fastbacks for many, many, many years. And to get a message from her was absolutely amazing. She no longer lives here in Seattle, but we corresponded for quite a while, and we came up to the conclusion that she needs to come on the show. So in the near future, watch out for the Kim Warnick episode of Air Raid, all right? Also, this. Oh, my God. Okay, big donation to talk about. We've been getting a lot of donations recently, some big, some small, and it's all helping, man. Keep me kind of motivated in bringing you new entertainment and new things to listen to and new music, right? Yeah. But this one really took the cake. This one, and, you know, I've always hesitated to tell you how much people have donated, but I think I need to say this one because it was amazing. Morgan Ashford of St. Louis, Missouri, sent us $300. She writes, $1 for each episode that I have loved and listened to over the years. Thank you so much for all the entertainment. I love your show. I hope it keeps on going forever. Oh, Morgan, thank you so much. Oh, my God. That $300 is going to come in so much. It's going to help out. It's going to... I'm so out of practice. This is the sixth time I've recorded this intro. I can't do it again. Morgan Ashford of St. Louis, Missouri, thank you so, so much. If you would like to donate to the show, you're listening to the show right now because you like it, right? Maybe you're just finding out about the show. But you can go to our website, air-raid.net, and at the top left-hand corner of the webpage, you'll see a donate button, and you can just donate whatever you feel this show is worth, man. And it's up to you, really. But it does, you know, it helps us keep the lights on here in the backyard and helps us get new equipment. We constantly need new cords and new memory cards and new, you know, hard drive space and everything like that to keep this show going. Not to mention, you know, paying the web guy, man. You got to pay that web guy, you know. So thank you so much. And if you'd like to donate to the show, you know, to keep things solid here and in the black, that would be very, very helpful, because this is you know, it's a hobby. It's become a love of mine, and we want to keep it going. So I hope you do too. So donate to the show. Anything you can, man. $1, $5, $10, $300, man. That'd be great. Get another one of those. All right. Coming up in the next weeks, like I said, we took this month off to kind of, you know, reevaluate. I took, you know, some time to spend with my family without anything in the way. And it was good for me. It was good for me, man. I needed a break. I needed it. And we got to, you know, spend some well-needed time with the kiddos and my wife, you know, and deal with the health stuff that's been going on. So it's been a good time. And it's also given me time to really line some great stuff up for the month of July. So coming up in the coming weeks, we've got, next week, wonderful conversation with Warren Spicer of the band from Montreal, Plants and Animals. And then the week after that, John Carpenter, director of The Thing, director, writer of Halloween, a very accomplished musician as well, and composer for basically all of his movies. And director of Escape from New York, man, with Kurt Russell. It's a good conversation. It's a little bit shorter, but that's coming up. And then also we've got this, oh my God, we've got an episode with a conversation that went completely awry. And we're going to do something special for that, because it is possibly the worst conversation that I've ever had. And it's only about 2 minutes long before I was basically kicked out. So we'll bring you that in the coming weeks as well. So look forward to that. All right, let's get into it, shall we? Sam Beam of Iron and Wine. I was at one of their shows that they played in Seattle, and it was, I think, the band of Horses had just formed, and were playing, I think, one of their first shows, opening up for Iron and Wine here in Seattle at Numo's. And it was a fantastic show. It blew me away. And that was quite a few years ago. So this was a real treat. I've been a fan of Sam's for a long time. We'll just get into the conversation, I guess, right? All right. It's a lot of fun, guys. And this song is amazing. Boy with a Coin by Iron and Wine. Our first, let's see. First musical break of episode 300 right here, man. 6 years of the Air Raid podcast. Oh, and stick around for the end of the episode, because we've got a compilation, kind of a retrospective of the last 100 episodes here on Air Raid, man. And it's a lot of fun. It's not all 100 episodes. It's just a compilation of 10 shows that I picked out that were some of my favorites from the last 100 episodes. So stick around for that. That'll be at the end of the show. Okay, this is Iron and Wine. The song is Boy with a Coin, off of the album The Shepherd's Dog, released back in 2007. We'll be back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears, with special guest this week, Sam Beam, a.k.a. Iron and Wine. Stay with us. Girl with a bird. Yeah, as I was saying as we were walking up here, I was admiring the fact that you're setting up your own stage.
Oh, yeah. Well,
with all the lamps.
It's fun, yeah.
And everything. Who came up with that idea?
My wife came up with that idea.
Yeah?
She does a lot of stagecraft and costuming, and just her mind works that way much better than mine.
Uh-huh.
So she came up with that idea. She knew that we didn't have a lighting designer traveling with us, and it's a fun way to sort of take control of the look immediately.
Have you ever worked with a lighting designer?
Yeah, several times.
Is that something that kind of comes with the territory of being in a bigger band?
It's well advised.
Yeah.
To have someone, you know, to have a professional presentation. And the lighting is a big, you know, it can be subtle or it can be, you know, it can punch you in the face over the top, you know, crazy light show, or it can be really subtly shifting throughout the thing. You know, it's all part of the presentation.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Was that kind of like, because you come from, and I'm sure a lot of people that are listening to this actually know this, but you come from a teaching background.
Yeah.
A professor of film.
That's right.
Correct?
Yeah. I did.
Yeah.
I studied film, and then I was working for a while, and then I was teaching for a while. Doing music as a hobby, just in my spare time, and then eventually one took over the other.
Yeah, but I imagine like stagecraft kind of came like second nature to you.
You know, I wish it did, because that would have helped me along the way figure some things out sooner. Mine was more of a independent filmmaking, which is lighting is lighting, but at the same time, you know, there's lots of things that people do to lively up a stage, a fixed space, and that was never really something that I had really delved into. But over the years, have had a ball, like, you know, getting into it and having other people collaborate with and stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, super fun.
So, what kind of film were you into, man? Like, what brought you into
me?
Being a film student, and then
I went to an art school, and always, you know, I liked movies growing up. We all grew up with movies.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure. Are we talking like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
That, like, is a movie.
Michael Keaton and Batman. Is that what got you into
that
it?
That is a movie. Yeah. But I like lots of different kinds of art. I liked. You know, taking pictures, I like writing stories, I like music, and so filmmaking was kind of an obvious multidisciplinary thing that I could, you know, get my hands wet in all those different things in one medium. And so it was super fun. It's also very cost prohibitive.
I would imagine.
Prohibitively expensive, but it was a lot of fun, you know, to lose your, you know, let your imagination go wild.
Yeah, so what kind of stuff was your... What had you worked on in the past?
Well,
like what type of films?
I went to a film school, and then everyone that goes to film school is faced with walking out the door eventually and starting from scratch. So I went down to Miami and worked on a bunch of indie movies and a lot of commercials, some larger movies, but mostly the indie movies and commercials.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, you know, I was good at it. You know, I enjoyed the process of making things. I enjoyed making music more.
Yeah?
Yeah, but, you know, filmmaking is it's a challenge, and I think a lot of people, myself included, enjoy being faced with a challenge and facing it with a team, coming across, facing the odds and seeing what you can do. It's exciting and exhilarating. It's also, you know... it's fun to because you can usually see crew member, you can usually see, now you can with like video assistants, so you can see what you're working on, and it's exciting as opposed to you used to have to wait and maybe you would see the movie or probably not.
So you said that you worked on some commercials though. Like, was that kind of like just because you needed a job, or like needed to?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't
waiting. Payments on things.
Yeah, I did have lots of things to pay for. I was working.
Yeah. But was that, I guess where I was going with that was like, if your first love is like, you know, making would be considered more artful.
I don't know.
Or
I mean,
anything like that.
I like lots of different types of music. I'm not. I'm not like that. I'm not pretentious about it. I love action movies. I love, I like all kinds of movies. I love film history, and so the fun thing is to draw all those things into something that pertains to your life, but is also accessible and entertaining. I mean, it's the whole point of it. But at the same time, no one, I came out of film school. Who's going to give me like $1 million to make some pretentious piece of shit? I mean, it's,
did
I
you think
on
that
commercials
was it,
like
you,
everyone else.
let me ask you this, because I know when I graduated college, I was just like, oh yeah, this is going
to
be the easiest fucking thing in the world.
Yeah.
Like, I can just get a job as a geologist, no problem. Yeah. Right,
people like, just lined up to give you money. I know it was a drag. Just had to weed through them all.
Right, yeah,
it's forever. I worked on commercials. I worked on indie movies and all kinds of stuff. I was also working in the market that I was working in. That's what they make in Miami. There's some big.
Oh, it
big
was all in Miami.
Yeah,
all in Florida.
Or around in Florida.
Okay,
yeah. It's a place where people come to make things, but not where, there are some large productions, but most of it is commercial.
Right, right. Yeah.
A lot of fashion photography, did a lot of that too.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. No kidding. What was your favorite thing that you worked on? Or do you have one?
I don't remember at this point. I did lots of, I was just doing jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't terribly fulfilling. It was a skill that I could do to pay the bills. And then I would go home and work on a screenplay or honestly just go home and do all my spare time was writing songs. And so by the time I got into the field that I had prepared myself for, I was spending all my spare time writing songs. And so it's really no wonder.
Had you always done that since you can remember it?
I had always played guitar, but I'd never taken songwriting very seriously until I was in graduate school for film. A friend of mine let me use his four-track recorder, and then it became I'd love to paint and I love to make things. I went to art school, and I like the process of making something, developing something, and polishing it until you can, develop it into something. And
right.
So that's when I got the recorder for the songs. That's when this light bulb went off in my head, and writing a song became the same kind of exercise where you record something, then you can listen to it and react and change it and develop the thing. And so that was a stepping stone for me.
That makes a lot of sense to me, because I remember when I first got my first kind of recording element, which was a four track as well, that was stolen from the college that I was going going to, because they didn't use them anymore.
But stealing is wrong.
I do, yeah. But
I'm
it
just
was
gonna tell you that I'm just gonna lay that out. You can do with it as you wish.
I will. But it was given to me by somebody in the music department, and
that you stole it from.
That no, I didn't steal it. They did. I was just using it.
That's what they all say. I'm sorry. It doesn't hold up in court.
It doesn't hold up in court. No, no. And now I'm telling the world as well. So that's
work.
That could be a problem.
Nice work.
I can edit that out in post. but it was a very eye-opening moment to be able to layer things, and put vocals down on something that you couldn't really do before. It's
let your imagination
very eye-opening.
Yeah.
So that was kind of your intro to kind of writing music then.
Huh? Yeah, that's what got me deeper into it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, were your parents musical? Did you grow up in kind of a musical
household? Not particularly.
No,
my grandmother played piano in church, but and some of my other on the other side, some people sing, but not particularly musical.
Yeah. Where? When did you pick it up? Like.
I started playing guitar when I was like 13 or 14. Wanted to play punk rock music with my friends.
Of course.
Because that's what we did.
As every 13 and 14 year old boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your first guitar?
My My mother and I gave my dad an acoustic guitar in the mid-70s, you know, when that kind of thing was popular. You know, he wanted to sound like Merle Haggard or something. And so it was laying around. He didn't really use it. And so I picked it up. It was in the closet until I found it.
Steel string, nylon?
It was a steel string guitar, yeah. And the action was ridiculous.
Just so super high.
Yeah, it took a lot of... After I discovered that most guitars aren't like that, I was like, you know...
It was so much easier.
It was definitely a relief.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Do you still have it?
No.
No?
I don't.
Oh, man.
Why would I keep that piece of shit?
I don't know, man. There's something sentimental about the musical instruments. I've always felt that way.
Yeah.
Not to you.
Not really.
No.
I mean, I like them. Yeah, there's certain ones that I like more than others, but I don't have a thing for things like that. Mm-hmm. And also, guitars are, you know, I treat them sort of like colors on a palette, you know.
Sure.
One's good for one thing, another's good for another thing. I don't have like a, I don't get too enamored.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think my mood just changes too fickle.
Uh-huh.
But I definitely have ones that feel better to play, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't get too attached.
And you keep those ones around, though, right?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. But I go through them, too. Those go in phases, uh-huh. too. I like to think of it as a Zen exercise, but I think that might be being generous to myself. I think, I just don't get attached.
Yeah.
I don't know, for some reason, I don't. I know a lot of people who do, and I don't blame them, because guitars are cool.
Yeah, but man.
I think maybe I'm just lazy.
Did you ever, I've heard you say before that that you've never been, you know, quote unquote, classically trained on guitar.
I didn't train at all.
Yeah. You just kind of worked it out yourself.
Yeah, I just played by ear.
Yeah.
You know, I can hear a note and find it, and then I would just build it from there. Mm-hmm. You know, you start trying to learn songs, your favorite songs, you know, on the radio or whatever, and then and I had a couple friends who showed me a few chords here and there, and then you just sort of go from there.
You're just working it out.
It takes a lot longer than it should.
Oh yeah.
But at least you learn the lessons.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they're written in concrete.
Yeah, I never had the the mind to sit there and actually learn that stuff. It always felt like math.
Oh yeah, I've never been too good at swallowing music theory either. I wish I could, because it would make communicating with, you know, my band or other musicians a lot more succinct, or at least quick.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about, because you have played like it's turned into basically your career, and you've played with a lot of I'm guessing classically trained musicians.
Classically trained is a different thing, but yeah, people who know what they're doing.
Yeah. Maybe I should have used that. Yeah.
But at the same time, most musicians are fairly generous, and as long as you can sing it to them, they can hear what you're talking about. They get it fairly quickly. It would just be more convenient for me to have learned those things. But at the same time, I don't think my musical approach would be as unique. Not that
sure.
I'm saying it's like terribly unique, but it is. It developed through me and not through, you know, someone else. Mm-hmm. So, I admire that in other musicians. And so hopefully they admire it in me.
I would like to think so.
Maybe.
I used
maybe
to
we'll
use...
Have to do a survey.
I'm not saying that you're doing this, but I used to use that as an excuse
to
my father.
I think you are saying that. You are. Don't get passive aggressive with
no,
me.
No, not at all, man. Not at all. Sam, I'm so sorry. No, I used to use it as an excuse to my dad why I wasn't studying. Right?
Totally. Yeah.
And I used to always, my go-to was like, well, you know, because he was always like, he would always want me to learn certain songs. So like House of the Rising Sun, I had
that's
to learn that
one.
So he could play, so I could play it for him. You
that's
know?
A good one, yeah.
That's a good starter, right?
My folks never pushed me in any direction. They didn't really know what to do with me, because they weren't particularly, you know, what do you call it, right brain, you know, just they weren't, they're creative people, but not, you know, along the lines that I was doing. And so they were just hoping for the best. They were very supportive, and since, you know, they anything I wanted to do, they would facilitate, but they didn't really know, they didn't push me along those lines at all.
They just let you go.
Yeah, which is really great in hindsight, you know?
For sure.
But yeah, I think it would be one thing if I was, you know, procrastinating or I needed to learn it for some reason, but I just wasn't actually playing guitar. But I play guitar like all the time. In my spare time, just always playing the piano or the guitar because I love it. But I also like, you know, if I get in a jam and I want to, I mean, I'll look at a page in a music theory book and learn stuff that I can apply like so quickly, but I have a hard time just sitting and studying the thing because I just like to play.
Right.
You know, it just seems silly.
Yeah. But so you're picking up like chords and how to you know, play other
relations,
songs and stuff like that.
Yeah, just different voicing, relationship, scale relationships. Yeah. You know, just there's so much you can go, you know, obviously you can go so deep with it. I've just never given the time because I've always just been busy chasing whatever I'm hearing and discovering it that way.
Right. What were some of your kind of key early influences in music?
I mean, I listened to all kinds of stuff. My folks grew up in, you know, they were in college in the mid '60s, and so, you know, R&B, that kind of '60s R&B is huge.
Yeah.
For them, country music was always around. I grew up in South Carolina. I mean, that's everywhere, but it was a big deal around our house. But at the same time, you know, the music that was coming up when I was in school as a kid, you know, skate punk and new wave music, I mean, all that stuff. I also just love the radio. I love the idea of being able to turn this little box on and hear all these crazy sounds. And so it's hard to, you know, it's such a big mix mash, but, you know, REM was a big deal because they were kind of a regional band where I lived, and all that kind of music. And, you know, I've always just been someone who's always searched things out, you know, even, you know, going to the library and finding music, you know.
Just checking out new stuff.
Just sounds. You're just enamored with sounds.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to say, you know, what, I mean, as far as songwriters, I think, you know, I always tend to be inspired more by, you know, the more poetic type of song, you know, the Dylans and the Townes Van Zants and Joni Mitchells of the world, Leonard Cohens and Paul Simons and those folks.
Yeah. That's great. Nick Drake.
He was great, yeah.
Man. Yeah. I remember when that guy, when I first heard Nick Drake.
Yeah.
Just Pink
Put
Moon.
You right to sleep.
It almost did. I was at a wedding. Somebody used it in their wedding. They used Pink Moon, the song, and it totally blew my world apart.
Oh, wow.
I was in high school, and it really just like totally opened my mind to a whole new realm of you know, what people would call folk music.
Those are fun moments, man.
Oh yeah, totally. And life is full of them too, right?
Hopefully it still is.
I hope so. Yeah, totally. Well, let's do this. Let's take our second musical break, and we'll come back with more from Sam Beam from Iron and Wine. Back in just a moment on episode 300 of the Air Raid Podcast. Stay with us. We left
flowers in the field. Is that too noisy now?
I am going to have to boost. Into the wind, it'll baptize your skin till your music is tender as trees for the truth we believed. It's the wind we remembered when we were overcome, spinning in the wheels, hitting bottom in the well's being mud, crying to the cold till we felt the sun. Serpent and the Savior laying side by side. Heaven was the corner where we tried to hide. Our run would be long and our river would be wild. We
Let's ring another freedom bell. I'll back to the sound, but it's sermon here. All things wild, draw cups until the waters go. Our memories are Christ and our hearts are closed. Trees for the tears when we leave. It's the wind we'll remember. We'll be overcome, spinning in the wheels, hidden bottom in the wellspring mud, crying to the cold till we feel the sun. Homes up a hill where these weary legs will run. We close our eyes, see a serpent and a favorite savior lay side by side. Every heaven only you and I could find. Our run will be long and our river will be wide. Wide. Bells come back. Star we know all night. What valleys are clay when our coin is sky?
Back to when you got this like four track recorder and started like playing basically for yourself,
right?
Recording sounds and everything. Like, was there a moment when you started doing that? That you were like, I want to make a go of this, or was it just happenstance that it?
It's funny that you said
that it occurred.
My dad used to book R&B bands for his fraternity in
really?
The 60s, yeah. So he hosted like the Four Tops and Smokey Robinson,
what?
All these people.
Are you serious?
Yeah, but he also told me at a young age, you know, do not go into the music business because it is written by fucking thieves. And
yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
Okay, Dad, you know, not even thinking like that would be ever something that I would actually
right.
be interested in doing.
Because how do you even do that?
Yeah, I was like really young. But it stuck with me, and so I was always like, well, I can't do that, so let's just, you know. But I love playing music, but I never thought of it as a career. But also because I wasn't trained, you know, I
yeah.
just, you know, and that was intimidating, you know. You hear all these records that are so sophisticated, and I was just tooling around, you know, three chords and whatever ridiculous rhyme I was trying to work, and it was really intimidating. And so I didn't really think of it as an option. And I was also really happy to be doing the film work that I was doing.
Yeah.
But eventually, I was spending so much time and energy doing that, I was like, you know what? It seems kind of silly. I should, you know, maybe see what it would be like, you know, see what it take to, you know, actually make good on some of my, at least
yeah.
my time and energy investment.
But was it like a gradual step, though? Because we didn't really talk about this, but you were a professor.
Yeah.
At a
yeah.
college.
Yeah.
Of film. I mean, that seems like a pretty steady job. Like,
yeah. I mean, I wasn't doing it like playing like this is what I am going to be doing this forever. You know, I was just
sure.
it was making
sure.
ends meet at the time.
We
started a family and, you know, I needed to be available as the production, freelance production, you know, it was just, when I was single, it was great because you work all the time.
Yeah.
That's your life. But then when I started having kids, I needed to be home some.
Yeah, but therein lies like the rub, right? Like you find yourself in music,
yeah.
for lack of a better explanation.
Yeah.
But and then you kind of decide, you know what? This is what I want to do. That's got to be kind of a scary thing, especially being a family man.
Yeah, life has some. I think life enjoys its ironies more than we do sometimes. you know, at the same time, you just take it day by day and do what you feel is best in the moment. I think that's all you can really do.
Mm-hmm.
And as an artist, I think you have to be honest with yourself and pursue your obsessions no matter where they go, how difficult it is for other people.
Yeah.
or for yourself. And so that's what I did. That's what I did. And it was also an opportunity fell in my lap that was kind of hard to dismiss. I got a call from Sub Pop Records here in town. They called me because they had heard some music that I made and just called me up to see if I wanted to work with them. And so, you know, out of the blue, you know, a label that meant a lot to me because I loved the records they put out in the 90s. And so, you know, was I going to say, you know, this probably is the most rational thing I could do? No, it was, you know, a blessing.
Yeah.
Fell from the fucking heavens. And so I was going to, of course I jumped on it.
Sure, sure. Well, it must have been an exciting moment too, right?
Yeah, super exhilarating.
I mean, that's that's crazy. A very validating feeling too.
Totally,
as an artist.
And that's what every artist, no matter what they say, no, it's just for me. It might they might be doing it just for themselves, but every artist wants to feel appreciated and validated. I mean, if they say they don't, they're lying.
Because
there's nothing wrong with feeling like you're doing something right.
Yeah, yeah. So, would, at any point, was the voice of your father in the back of your mind, just like building like a cloud?
It still is.
Never go into the music industry.
It still is. I think I've validated his, it for him.
Oh no.
Met it all along the way. It's totally right, but it doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it.
Yeah, yeah. The love of it supersedes all that, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
It does, and it gets better as time goes by too, because it's one of those things where there's no right or wrong answer. There's always things left to discover, and as you do it more and more, you learn more and more, and you can always apply it to the next thing that you do, and it's really fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, what was the first show like that you ever played? Did you start out doing like open mics or anything like that?
No, I didn't. I got a call from Sub Pop, and they said, "Well, you should probably go on tour."
Like, wait a minute. So you had never even played a show?
No, I had never played a show.
You had never played in front of people?
No. I was just doing it as a hobby. No, I was just doing it for fun.
I had read that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, he's overstating it.
No, I was not overstating it. That wasn't my thing. I mean, I'm an introvert at heart.
Yeah.
And it's taken me a long time to learn how to be a host and how to be comfortable and enjoy the spontaneity of playing on stage.
And doing stuff like this, I bet, too, right?
Yeah, I'll talk to anybody.
Yeah,
But doing, you know, playing and doing my art in front of people was not my... I liked, like we were saying before, I like to be able to develop it and polish a thing and polish it until I'm ready to present it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I don't want to give people some half-assed thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, that was a big learning... There was a big learning curve attached to that. But yeah, they suggested that I should probably learn how to play.
So what did you do?
Well, I was friends with the guys at there's a club that I think is there's a club in Miami called Churchill's in Little Haiti, which is a wonderful club because there's only so many clubs in Miami, you know. Punk rock clubs or you know whatever, everybody plays there and everyone's accepted. Rockers and you know, electronic stuff, like really out there music, but also, you know, everything in between. It was like the bar in Star Wars. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, the cantina.
Yeah, like you just didn't know everyone was going to be hanging out and having a ball together.
Somebody might get their arm chopped off.
I didn't see that, but that's always a possibility that you must prepare for.
That's true.
I knew the guys there, and they let me start playing. You know, I opened up for this punk rock band called Unsane. I think that was the first show, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You opened up for Unsane.
Yeah, solo acoustic.
Wow.
I'm not sure if I helped their ticket sales, but anyway.
How'd it go?
It was helpful to me. I mean, it went as well as you could imagine. Some shy, introvert dude who who at the time only thought his voice could whisper. You know, it wasn't like I was doing it to be affected. It was just that's what I knew that my voice could do.
Right, right.
Because you hear me, I'm fairly soft-spoken just in general.
It was
horrifying. But at the same time, you know, you have to go through those. Those are doors you have to go through to develop.
Yeah, and but most people don't do it, Sam. But most people don't go through that door after getting signed to Sub Pop.
Yeah, it's different. Doesn't mean it's not right.
No. I think it's a testament to the quality of your art. You know,
well,
I
mean, you're very generous.
Yeah,
but I mean, I just always spent my time with the developing the writing and the recording stuff, and so, but at the same time, as soon as I got into performing, it immediately started to inform how I did the other, and they both started to feed each other in a really fun, in a fun way.
Yeah, so you kind of looked at it more as just a learning experience then.
I thought of it at the time as a way to make a dollar.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, you can't, even when people were selling a bunch of CDs, you know, you'd always, you have to go on tour.
Right,
and
right.
So, and I, in hindsight, it was something that I really wanted to do. I was desperate to see the country. There was so much traveling that I, you know, that I was ready to experience. So many parts of the country that I'd never seen, parts of the world I'd never seen, and was so anxious to do so.
Yeah.
You know, not really, you know, I wasn't totally aware of that, but I knew there was something exciting about the idea of stepping through that door.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah, it's always something that I've viewed as not glamorous, might not be the right word for it, but something that I've always kind of held in high regard, you know, in my imagination, like something that I've never been able to do. Well, not travel, but like tour.
Well, they're the same thing.
Well, yeah. But tour, you know, showing people your music and everything like that.
I'm teasing. I'm sorry. I'm a jerk.
Got it. Was it, you know, that first tour that you went on, was it something that, like, was it a super eye-opening experience? Or,
oh,
you know,
of course,
for good or for bad?
Oh, it was the worst. You're always in some shithole looking at graffiti dicks all over the wall. I mean, right. It's not, we call it living the dream.
yeah.
Quote, unquote. But, you know, at the same time, all those experiences, it's hard to summarize, to be honest. They're all part of every musician's story in a way that is invaluable. I'll be right up. That's invaluable. It's part of whatever you want to call it, paying your dues, but it's also just giving you perspective.
Sure.
You know, I feel like, on the one hand, we were joking about how I was sort of thrown into this, you know, we were joking about how I had gotten attention from the recordings that I made, but was totally unprepared to do the real work and be able to present it.
Yeah.
And so, in the one, those things are all just as valuable. I was thrown into the lap of this curated audience that was ready for whatever Sub Pop was putting out, you know.
Right.
I was given a podium and the space to say what I wanted to say, even though I, you know, probably didn't deserve it as much as other people. And so it's not lost on me that all those, that, you know, whatever that slag that you have to do through all these graffiti dicks in the backstage is part of that journey too, to make you understand that, you know, there's a lot of work involved
to
build a career and start from scratch and prove yourself and make the relationships, the friends with the audience, with the industry, you know, people, the promoters, everyone in the industry. It's all a huge community.
Yeah.
And so, and everyone has to, you know, do the work.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty amazing, man. Like, you know, I've been a fan of yours for a long time, and I think the first time, I was telling you earlier, the first time that I ever saw you play was it must have been around like 2003, 2004.
Oh, yeah.
And we went to go see this, you know, friend of a friend's band called Band of Horses that was opening up for Iron and Wine. I say, okay, Iron and Wine. Who's that? And there was about four people in the audience at Numo's for Band of Horses, which...
Well, they just started.
Yeah, they had just started. And then the crowd just flowed in like water for your set, and I was absolutely blown away by it.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah, thanks. It was a great show.
Thanks. I wonder what I played.
It was a while ago, man.
Yeah. But that was a fun. That was a treat to get to, because Ben had done so much for me. I mean, that he's the reason that Sub Pop called me, because we would send each other music, and he started spreading around town to friends, and that's how they got a hold of it.
Yeah.
And so he had done so much for me. It was fun to be able to return the favor when he started his own band, to be able to say, well, you've got a space to do your thing whenever you want to.
And it's been amazing to watch what they've done as well.
Yeah, they're doing all right.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, this you know, being with Sub Pop probably plays a large part of like who you got to play music with and everything up until now. Who you know, the new album with Jessica Hoop just came out,
right,
and you're on tour for that right now.
Yeah,
how did you meet Jessica? And
I discovered her stuff on the internet just randomly.
Really?
Yeah, I try to keep up with what's going on.
Sure,
perusing. And I ran across some stuff, but I came to it super late. I totally missed the boat on. She has like three or four records, and I discovered the most recent one at the time, and was just really blown away. I had also, you know, we did a duets record, and I had been thinking of doing I'd been sort of developing this idea for years, you know. It was on the shelf with about 100 other ideas, but you know, something that I thought would be a fun project to do, you know, with a female counterpart and co-write songs, because I had also was interested in co-writing, you know, so just trying my hand. I don't know how I try my hat. I'm not even wearing a hat. Wearing that hat for a change, co-writer hat. And so when I heard her music, I thought, yeah, maybe this is the voice for that project. We'll see. Mm-hmm. And so reached out to her and had her come play some, open up some shows for me, so some get to know your time. And we ended up getting to sing a song of hers, because she was reinterpreting one of her own records in like a sort of a stripped down kind of a way. And so we got to sing together, and it sounded great. And so I think we both were sort of like, well, that sounds cool. Maybe we should pursue something.
It was almost just like a click.
Yeah, sometimes in music, that's all it takes. You know, if it sounds good, it gives you the bravery or maybe the naivety to just, you know, jump in.
Sure,
first in the shallow end.
Yeah, yeah. I get that.
Yeah.
It always took me a long time to get comfortable with playing with other people.
Yeah,
that was always a thing for me.
I'll play with anybody, but sometimes you know when the magic happens, and you know when it's just having fun.
Oh, sure.
There was a spark, for sure. Which I think there's something in the timbre of our voices. They blend really well, but at the same time you can hear each individual at the same time, which is kind of a unique thing. It becomes its own little sonic creature.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, that was fun. That was an interesting experience. Just because it was a song that I really liked, and to be able to sing it with her, and it sort of informed the whole project. It's really like, because it sounded good, it gave us this bravery to just say, you know, who cares what it's going to end up?
Yeah.
Let's just try it. Let's see what happens. Because most of the time I listen to the music and I don't know what people are saying. I can't understand their lyrics, but it sounds cool, and I'll listen to it several times just for the sonic quality. If that's
there,
I'm very generous.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they want to take the time to make their vocals audible and make it that part of the experience too. That's cool, and that's usually really cool.
Yeah.
But it's not necessary to me.
Yeah. Well, I think the record sounds great.
Thanks, man. You can even understand what we're saying sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah, yeah. And I'm not even a guy that actually, I'm like you, I don't really pay attention to lyrics all that much. I just like the sound of people's voices, you know?
It's usually best not to pay attention to lyrics. It usually makes you like them less.
yeah, a little bit sometimes. Sam Beam, thank you so much, man. Thanks for taking the time to talk with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
And have a great rest of your tour.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, there you have it, folks. Sam Beam, a.k.a. Iron and Wine, all laid out for you here on episode 300 of Air Raid. Thank you so much for listening this week. We've got some great stuff coming up for you. Remember, next episode, 301 with Plants and Animals. 302 with Director Extraordinaire, the Horror Master, John Carpenter. And then 303 with a very special, terrible, terrible interview that was so freaking awkward that you guys are going to want to hear. episode 300, man. And we've got this compilation here at the end of the show that you should stick around for as well, okay? You can subscribe to Air Raid on iTunes, and if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. It only takes a couple seconds to give us a star rating on iTunes and helps us out a lot in the long run. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, Cairo Radio, and now on the Spreaker apps, and anywhere else that your podcasts are found. Just use a podcatcher and visit our website, air-raid.net, to subscribe directly to our RSS feed. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/theairraidpodcast. Our Twitter handle is @airraidnet. You can tweet at us there. Or you can email me directly at aaron@air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, folks. Take the pledge to tell somebody about the show. Bring it up in conversation. Share it on social media. The compilation, the 300th episode compilation here coming up in just a moment, is going to be available on SoundCloud, so you can search for it there and maybe share that with your friends there, huh? Yeah. Okay. Well, let's... God, what else can I say, man? But thank you so much. Thank you so much for sticking it out with us. If you're just joining us for the first time, please go to the archives. We've got tons of great interviews, great conversations with amazing guests, directors, actors, writers, and mainly musicians of the indie tip, right? Hip-hop, everything that, you know, alternative, I guess, I don't know. Genres of music, I don't know that. Oh, man. It's been a wild ride, folks. Thank you so much for your patronage and listening to the Air Raid podcast. Thank you so much for the donations, which you should continue to do as well. All right. Okay, here's the compilation for you. Music by Odessa. We'll see you next week. Thanks, everybody. We love you. Friedlander.
Cool.
Here on the Air Raid podcast. All right.
It had a good chance of being a cult hit.
Really?
I did know that, but I never thought we'd be making a prequel 15 years later.
That's so fucking...
Because, you know, most of the people in the first one are playing like...
Jessica Dobson of Deep Sea Diver, thanks for joining me today.
It's more... We try to make it a fluid thing. It's like we don't see a distinction between, okay, yes, I believe in God, and then I play music. It's like... How do those two things inform each other? Mm-hmm. And so it's mostly just trying to be hospitable.
Rodney Linderman joining me here.
Dead Melvin. My real name.
Thank you so much.
Battlefielder, nobody talks for the first like 25 minutes, and as soon as they start, you're like, boy, I liked it better when they weren't talking. It's as if, and this is somebody's religion, that's the best part.
Mr. Jack Garrett, welcome to the backyard, sir.
It's a horrible thing to kind of have to deal with because there's no one else to blame other than yourself. And
right,
as
man.
We know, I like that. I like to know that there's no one else to blame.
I love having someone else to blame.
Oh, I can't.
John Spencer of the John Spencer Blues Explosion right here on Air Raid. Stay with us.
To me, lo-fi
with distorted guitars and kind of like analog equipment.
That's
and
not lo-fi.
Like that.
Lo-fi to me connotes a sense of laziness. You know, like, oh well, the record sounds this way because
that's not
a Coca-Cola.
Not what I meant.
Well, I'm telling you,
okay,
what I think. Okay. Yeah.
No, I don't have pride.
You don't have pride?
I think. You know what I think? I don't. I'm not sentimental. I don't walk away going, I'm proud.
Yeah?
But there are...
Well, thank you so much, Jane Lynch, for joining me today. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
You bet. Aw, thanks. Back at you.
Soup of Jurassic 5.
What proud. And this guy was like, man, I know you, man. And I was just like, man, I sure hope I don't. This mother don't think I owe him no money or stuff like that. And he was like, J5. And I was like, nope. And he knew I was
right. Julia Shapiro of Chastity Belt here in the backyard. Welcome.
Yeah, we weren't expecting anything out of that. And then it got attention kind of for nothing. So with this one, we were like, well, this record's actually good.
And I said, we gotta get Jeff Ayman in the band. And he's like, fuck Jeff Ayman. And I was like, no, we have to get Jeff in the band because you guys together are amazing. You know,
yeah.
You've done Green River, you've done Love Bone, he does artwork, he's a great bass player.
Mike McCready, it has been a pleasure. Ishmael Butler of Diggable Planets and Shabazz Palaces, thank you so much for joining me.
Somebody said that somebody had Def Jam on the phone, but he was basically saying to me that, you know, we did good, and yeah. Like, and I thought, you thought Def Jam was... I hadn't thought about him for a while. I appreciate that.
Good, man. I love it. All right. Thanks, Ish.
Thank you.